You're tuned in to Met Radio, CJTM, 1280 AM on the dial for the Local Journalism Initiative. I'm Mia Johnson. When the overdose prevention site in Moss Park first opened its doors to the public, it wasn't a building at all. It was just a tent. This was in 2017, and between the months of May and October, nurses and harm reduction workers reversed 200 overdoses. No one died.
I was using 2018, 2017 in downtown Toronto using the sites. They went out into the Moss Park park with the tents, and you know, they were handing out harm reduction supplies like that. They only thought they were going to be open for the night, but they kept going because it was so needed.
Now, 9 years later, that same site, the Moss Park site, will be closing its doors in less than 2 months. And everyone is scared for what's next.
Needles are all over the place.
Heroin, crack, fentanyl, and meth.
Lions.
And tigers.
And bears.
It's like giving an alcoholic a card for the LCBO and saying, okay, go in there and go to town.
I think it's a convenient narrative that this government is using.
It's no empathy, it's no love, taking away these services from people thinking that they're not going to do drugs anymore.
Addicts, stop enabling them. That experiment failed. We all admit that.
The Ontario government has given the remaining 8 provincially funded active safe injection sites until June 2026 to wind down operations and transfer clients. No new funding for strategies to prevent overdoses was announced alongside this recent decision. And the recent cuts come after a string of province-wide closures, with 4 sites in Toronto made to close their doors as of last spring because of their proximity to schools and childcare centers. This is what Ontario Health Minister Sylvia Jones told the public in late summer 2024.
In Toronto, there's been numerous stories of altercations, stabbings, shootings, and even a homicide in the vicinity of these sites. Our first priority must always be protecting our communities, especially when it comes to some of our most innocent and vulnerable, our children.
The Ontario government also defunded a site in Toronto's West End in November 2025, forcing its closure, as well as 4 urgent public health need sites, which work just like safe sites but are only available to clients staying at the shelter. Sites are meant to be transitioned into homelessness and addiction recovery treatment hubs, or heart hubs, where patients will no longer be able to use under supervision.
We aren't encouraging handing out needles and drugs, and there's no community that wants it. We're putting in investment of over $550 million in heart hubs that are going to help people get them proper shelter, get them the support they need, get them employment if they need. It's working.
Ontario Premier Doug Ford has promised that heart hubs are the solution to solving Ontario's drug crisis, but others have criticized this shift away from on-site care. Here's addiction physician in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Dr. Erin Knight. She's the president of the Canadian Society for Addiction Medicine.
People don't use drugs because there's a service to use them more safely. We're not making a place for people to use drugs who are not already going to do it or are not already doing it. What we're doing is giving people who are using drugs the opportunity, instead of using them in public settings and in parks and in washrooms, to make the choice to use them in a place where they can be supported while engaging in that behavior that they were going to do anyways. The piece of people being concerned is really important in terms of being able to roll out any kind of harm reduction services or substance related services, because we do need to make sure that people understand why we're doing it, that they understand what the benefits are, and that they can voice their concerns in a way that is going to be incorporated into how we run the services.
Public health experts, frontline workers, and advocates have warned these closures will lead to higher risks of infection, greater strain on emergency services, and put more people at risk of dying from an overdose.
We hear a lot of conversations about protecting the community, and people who use drugs are part of the community.
To find out what's happening on the ground, we spoke to a harm reduction worker with deep ties to the Moss Park community. Ecosia Jan Mante is a housing stability case manager at the Women's Only Shelter with Street Needs in Toronto. As a harm reduction worker, she provides harm reduction education, overdose response training, and distributes practical tools like naloxone and safer use supplies to promote safety for her colleagues working in the shelter system.
Taking away these services is the worst idea that you could possibly have. Being somebody who has greatly benefited from these sites, I, you know, just want to come on and I just want to talk about how much of a positive impact they are. They are not just places for people to use drugs. They're not just hubs for criminal activity. It is caring, love, and empathy, like-minded individuals who come together to support each other, people who have lost people, people with lived experience, who come together to take care of these people that society has forgotten about.
Jan Mante says harm reduction works because she's lived it and is still alive to talk to me about it. Before she was a worker and before she went through detox and got clean, she used the services at Moss Park.
Yeah, what did it mean to have access to this service when you don't have access to housing and living on the street?
Saved my life. It's absolutely dead. I can say wholeheartedly 100% saved my life. Like there was when I had my overdose. Like I wasn't a person to go down like that. Like I've only overdosed once, and I'm so thankful I was at the site. Like I woke up sitting in my chair on my back with my hand being held by Sarah. She was one of the overdose workers at the time, but she runs the Moss Park site now. So she was holding my hand and she just looked at me. She's like, you're okay. You're all right. We got you. I was like, did I die? And she's like, kind of. You're all right though. We got you. Mm-hmm. Like, and I could get up and everybody was calm around me and you know, it wasn't a traumatic experience. It was an experience that was like, okay. And it made me want to go back there even more to make sure that I'm okay.
That's why she's asking the province to reconsider their decision.
Because we can see that harm reduction works. We can see how much these workers care about these people. How I knew they cared about me. How I could come in there after a night of being out on the streets. I could go there after and know that I wasn't going to get robbed. I would be able to just lay down for a minute and close my eyes and know that there were eyes around me watching me and making sure that I'm okay.
Sometimes it was about getting a hot meal on a minus 40 night. Other times it was to let the staff clean her open wounds so they wouldn't get infected. But all of the time, she said it was because of the people around her who made her feel safe. These were relationships that stayed with her after she stopped using and went back to school. Her classes were at George Brown on St. James campus, which for the uninitiated who don't live in Toronto, that campus is right beside Moss Park.
What is that, a Black Mirror type of thing? Like, you know, like I can see my old life. Like I remember one day I was with these girls from my class and we were walking to go get food and one of these, this like homeless man came up and I know him, his name was Archie and he was so sweet and he came up and he gave me a hug and I looked over and I could see their faces were just like, like what the fuck is this guy doing? Like,
and you're like, no,
this is my buddy.
This is my buddy.
This is my buddy.
Like, we go way back.
I'm so sorry. I'm like, I've missed this person so much. Like. I don't care how dirty you are. I don't care how fucking, you know, smelly you are. Like, I'm so glad you're alive. Like,
this is a community she's still connected with. The people who helped her are now the same people she works alongside. They're her colleagues. She told me that's what's missing from this new Heart Hub model. The community is just not there in the same way, which was so important to her experience.
The amount of love and consistent showing up for people is what in the end boils down to getting people into these services, to get them to the places that they need to be. Because when you're traumatized over and over and over again by the systems, you're not going to ask for help. Yeah. It takes the person who's going to keep cleaning your open wound over and over and over again, knowing you're going to continue to go out there and do that, hoping that maybe one day you'll be willing enough to come and be like, you know what, I do need the help. It's super important for building rapport with the people that wouldn't necessarily trust anyone. Harm reduction is the point in the middle when someone is at their worst. It's meeting them where they're at and telling them, I'm going to leave you how you are until you're ready, but whatever supports you need, you can come to me for them. And consistently showing that person who is going through things that you could never imagine, doing things you could never imagine to survive.
People who use drugs often delay or avoid care because of anticipated stigma and discrimination. A team of researchers from the BC Center on Substance Use, among others, did a recent study on this relationship, the relationship between healthcare providers and substance users. More than half the people they interviewed chose to keep that information to themselves.
For a lot of people who use, and particularly who inject drugs, they don't have great relationships with healthcare systems.
This is Dr. Dimitra Panagiotoglou. She is a health services researcher at McGill University and a professor there as well. She's also the Canada Research Chair in the Economics of Harm Reduction. Dr. Panagiotoglou's work looks at drug policies overall, but often focuses on harm reduction interventions across Canada.
I want to go back to what you said about low barrier. What does that mean, having low barrier access?
Sure. So I think for a lot of folks across the city, there's already this understanding that it can be really hard to have a primary care physician. And then just establishing a trusting relationship and seeing them when they can be seen versus when you need to be seen, all these things increase the barriers of access. A low barrier example is something like a walk-in clinic where you don't necessarily need an established relationship. You can show up and the next available physician can see you. Mm-hmm. Supervised consumption sites kind of operate in the same way, where because you're in a space where there's a healthcare provider, you can ask them questions, they can take a quick look at you, see if they can help either refer you to other kinds of care or treatment, or prescribe an antibiotic as an example that I gave earlier. That is a really low entry, right? Because you kind of just show up and the services are tailored to meet your needs in that way. And so I know, as myself having struggled to find a primary care physician, how that changes your behaviors, how you avoid seeking healthcare until you absolutely need to, because just trying to find someone who will take you on is this additional task in your day-to-day life. And you can try to put it off for as long as you have to.
Yeah. And how does being a person who uses drugs add another layer to that?
Yeah. So there's, I mean, stigma really comes out, right? Because there's this concern among people who use substances, but also based on experience. It's not just in their heads, so to speak. Not every physician will meet them where they are and help provide the care that they need in the moment. And so that the additional stigma and shame they might feel, or discomfort, or even, you know, it can be much more of an aggressive experience or encounter, will keep them away from healthcare for as long as possible.
Dr. Panagiotoglou talked to us about what pressure safe consumption sites take off of healthcare workers and why low barrier access has been more successful when it comes to reaching these communities and making sure they're actually accessing this care that's available to them.
We normally work more with health measures. And from that work, I see that supervised consumption sites and overdose prevention sites can have meaningful impacts both on the individual lives of the people who use these sites, but also downstream consequences for a healthcare system. I won't talk about deaths. That's something that a lot of people talk about and look at. But I can say for something like skin and soft tissue infections, which are highly common among people who inject drugs, when you have access to a supervised consumption site, you have what we call low barrier access to care, because there is a health professional on site. And this person can, you know, check in on your wounds, on your injection sites, and they might observe a new infection, something that can be quickly treated with an antibiotic. Mm-hmm. Trouble is, for a lot of people who use, and particularly who inject drugs, that they don't have great relationships with healthcare systems. And so they avoid visiting care for a host of reasons, including biased perspectives and stigma. And so these kinds of infections can quickly deteriorate the health of the person to the point where they might need a limb amputation, wound debridement. So that's a cleaning of the wound that happens in a healthcare setting, like a hospital, which is incredibly painful, but is also expensive for the healthcare system as a whole. So there's this tension between the safety of neighborhoods, but also the health and well-being of people who use substances beyond just keeping them alive. That has net improvements to the well-being of people who use the healthcare system overall, right? Because if there's fewer people showing up for these amputations, et cetera, that has knock-on effects for everyone.
Toronto is at a critical juncture in its approach to public health and substance use. Safe consumption site closures continue to raise alarm. The Toronto Board of Health held a public meeting to address these challenges in March. They passed a motion that urges the province to keep the funding alive for consumption and treatment services in the city. That is, in this case, at both the Toronto sites Moss Park and Fred Victor. City Councillor Chris Moyes, the board's chair, spoke about some of the growing struggles within overdose prevention then. He told the board the city needs comprehensive strategies that can effectively respond to a drug toxicity crisis that is escalating, especially as resources continue to change or shrink.
We've heard loud and clear from existing SCS and other community organizations that they have been overwhelmed since the first wave of closures. I've also heard from residents who have noticed a significant increase in public drug use. I can only imagine that losing more sites will compound these negative impacts. I'm also very concerned about the impacts further closures will have on our ability to collect information about the unregulated drug supply through Toronto Drug Checking Services. The trends we see in fatal and non-fatal overdoses are largely due to what is in the drug supply. If we lose sight of what is in the drug people are using, we will be ill-equipped to respond to overdoses. Naloxone is undoubtedly one of the most effective tools we have to reverse overdoses, but it does not reverse the effects of veterinary tranquilizers, which are showing up in over 80% of fentanyl samples. We wouldn't know this without Toronto's drug checking services. This is just one example of why we must ensure drug checking samples collection sites remain available.
Toronto's drug checking services lost four sample collection sites as a result of the provincial legislation passed last December. The program checks people's drugs anonymously and for free and was another resource lost to the closures. We caught up with Councillor Moyes at the City Council meeting this week for an update. It's been almost a month now, and the province has not responded to Moyes' motion. Moyes said, while he's the chair of the health board, he is not a doctor or an expert, so he follows the science and listens to the experts and advises the provincial government to do the same. Premier Doug Ford and Health Minister Sylvia Jones have publicly stated they will not be changing course.
We have a system that has not worked. We are seeing more issues in our neighborhood, in our municipalities, in our communities. I have heard from parents. I've heard from community leaders. I've heard from mayors. I've heard from business leaders that saying it is getting worse, not better. So what we are doing has not solved the problem. I believe that our government is offering a solution to our municipal partners who, I will say, have been asking for many, many months to have pathways into treatment, to have pathways so that our neighborhoods don't become just a place for people to use drugs, that they go back to where we have communities working together.
I think it's a convenient narrative that this government is using. They're trying to say that this is about safety, but they know that's not the case. Their internal documents actually demonstrated that they knew that closing the sites would increase public drug use, would increase the risk of discarded drug use equipment in our communities. I'm incredibly frustrated, and I share the frustration of many community members right now who are asking, you know, what can we do to try to save the lives of people in our community at risk of overdose?
Robin Lennox, who you just heard, is a family doctor and the NDP's primary care critic. In a statement she put out last month, she wrote the decision to defund these sites is, quote, deadly and irresponsible, unquote.
We've seen now month after month record high numbers of ambulance calls for overdose. You know, in February, it was a short month of 28 days and we had 199 ambulance calls for overdose. That's the most ever that we've seen.
This is in Hamilton, Ontario, the riding where the NDP critic is from. Lennox founded an inpatient and substance use service at St. Joseph's Hospital. She also helped launch Hamilton's first safe consumption site, which closed last March. Since then, she told Met Radio in an interview, the government's new Heart Hub model has had a slow and stuttering start, with some sites not yet fully operational, calling into question whether the government was truly prepared for the transition.
It's really piecemeal, and I would say the Heart Hub model has not materialized as it was advertised by the government, and it certainly isn't a replacement for the overdose prevention services that were within the supervised consumption sites.
Since December, paramedics have been called to the Hamilton Central Library over 100 times, so much so the library launched a program in March to require people to have to present their library cards before entering in an effort to crack down on public drug use.
When those doors close, the need doesn't go away. It just gets displaced into places in the community where we don't have the resources to actually meet that need.
There's been similar trends in Toronto. EMS calls for suspected opioid overdoses are up 82% and close to 70% province-wide. That's according to the Ontario Opioid Tool, which tracks EMS response times. There's been an influx of clients moving to the remaining open sites, according to Toronto Public Health. The city's community agencies have been reporting signs of strain, including more complex client needs, insufficient resources, and burnout among staff. At a separate meeting in late November, Toronto Public Health's Dominic Popowicz provided an update on the city's public health strategy. Popowicz explained then how trends were being monitored.
City divisions and agencies have been monitoring a suite of indicators related to these closures. One indicator we've been tracking with support from the city's customer experience division is the number of services requested for needle or syringe pickup. While it is too early to determine the impact of SCS closures through this and other indicators monitored by the city, staff will continue to review new data monthly to see how these trends progress. We are also exploring new sources of data, including from community partners, that could be consolidated to provide a more comprehensive picture.
The Our Health, Our Plan strategy originally sought to expand these harm reduction services that the Ontario government is now transitioning to abstinence-based Heart Hub models.
The unregulated drug supply continues to cause many overdose deaths. The number of deaths has declined in 2024 and in the first half of 2025, but it remains 50% higher compared to the pre-pandemic average between 2017 and 2019. It is also important to note that this decline began prior to SCS closures in March of 2025. All of these harms are worth reducing.
The report revealed that decreased service availability forced more people who use drugs to do so in isolation, raising significant safety risks, and residents began reporting increased visible substance use and properly discarded supplies and growing concerns about safety in public spaces. Ecosia Jan Mente, who we heard from earlier, a housing stability case manager for Street Needs, could speak from experience.
It's going to be a burden on the shelters because, you know, now our people are going to stay longer and they're going to be with us and they're going to be using. And now our shelter workers have to be overdose response workers. There's not going to be new beds. There's not going to be new. Why would you leave the place that you're able to use in? And I wouldn't leave either.
Yeah.
But now we're going back and it's going to be bad, really bad before it gets worse. We're going to have to lose a lot of people before they go, uh-oh, that was probably a bad idea.
There are three drug consumption sites remaining open in Toronto. They're run by Street Health, Kensington Market Overdose Prevention Site, and Casey House. These sites won't be affected by the funding cut because they are not funded by the province.
And Casey House is obviously still going to be around, but, you know, that's different services for people with, you know, different needs.
Yeah.
And they only have so much.
Mm-hmm.
Since March 2020, Ontario's supervised consumption sites have recorded over a million visits. And in Toronto, neighborhoods where people have had access to these services, the overdose mortality rate went down by almost 70%.
It's seeing these people as your loved ones. It's seeing them as your friends and your family and your sisters and knowing that these people just need love. They just need someone to genuinely give a shit. You know, show them that no matter what, I'll continue to clean out your dirty wound. even if you're going to keep using drugs in the same place over and over again, and you know it's not good, and I told you it's not good, and I'm never going to get mad at you for doing it because I know that's how you what you're doing to survive. It's not having that. It's that unconditional, like I've watched my friends die. I've watched my people that aren't here anymore, and I won't have that happen to you. But again, as a worker, you can't care more than the client does. That's what I've also been figuring out as well. These are people with their own lives and own autonomy, and I go home after the end of the day and they stay there. And we don't all make it. We don't all make it. I made it because I had the supports around me when I did, and I took the help when I did. But harm reduction was the reason that I got to this point, when I was able to finally be like, ooh, I could probably do better. I could probably do better than this. Nobody wants to live like that. Nobody wants to live sleeping on the freaking warming grate outside the hospital. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to beg you for your change. Don't make the community have to deal with what comes next. It's going to be out of our control, and we're not going to be able to save the people like we were. An overdose is so easily reversed, especially in an injection site. It's built for that. The people there are trained for that. The community is not. Stop taking away our resources that we need to save our community. Because God forbid one of your family members come to our community. There won't be anybody to take care of them. There won't be that opportunity to get your loved one back.
Ecosia Jan Mante is a harm reduction worker and a housing stability case manager at the Women's Only Shelter with Street Needs on Pembroke in Toronto, Ontario. That's your community news update. None of this coverage would be possible without the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You've been tuned into Met Radio CJTM at 1280 AM in downtown Toronto for the Local Journalism Initiative. I am Mia Johnson.